From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 12th day of April, 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the weather forecast. Eric Snodgrass will join us from Agrible and tell us about that great big blizzard that's made its way mostly across the Midwest at this point and the long-term impact it may have into the growing season and on some of the livestock, of course, in those western areas. We'll take a quick look at yesterday's Census of Agriculture as well. We'll discuss how cropland tillage has changed over the five-year period from 2012 to 2017 and the average age of the farmer in the United States. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Mike Zuzulo from globalanalytics.biz now joins us out of Atchison, Kansas, as usual, for a Friday afternoon to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, good afternoon to you, Michael. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Todd. Hope you had a good week this week.
I did, but it's way better. Way better than the guys in the Dakotas and some of those places out west that have been suffering through just a blinding snowstorm. What difference has it made to the livestock industry there and in Chicago?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I do think that having these two bomb cyclones essentially go through the exact same areas in within 40 days in the heart of calving season is going to put a hole, a substantial hole. We don't know how big yet, in the cow-calf herd. And this means that summertime, early fall feeders are probably going to be very hard to come by. And it's probably going to mean that we're going to have to rely a lot more upon Mexico. So the trade deal with Mexico, the USMCA ratification, things like this become much more critical. I think this is where the livestock and the grains really have a different look to them. They have a different appearance by the funds in terms of how the funds look at them now versus the weather and versus the USDA supply demand report and versus the Federal Reserve minutes, all three of these things being the top three features this week. And you can see between the African swine fever and the blizzard that the livestock markets are buying weakness. They are trying to cover shorts when markets go down. And you're seeing also the spread start to come together, the April hogs coming together with the May hogs, because the April goes off next week and the May's carrying a premium. And so I think the April's trying to get up as high as it can before it goes off the board. The reason I'm going into this kind of detail, Todd, is because it's almost the exact opposite type price action than what we're seeing in the grains. The grains continue to be hampered by the lack of trade agreements. And I think, quite frankly, the trade believes the negotiations between many of our trading partners, the EU, China, Mexico, even maybe Canada now, and possibly Japan, have stalled out. And this is why they feel secure in the grain short position, whereas and why a blizzard doesn't make any difference to the grains and spring wheat especially, whereas with the livestock, they're taking it at face value.
Yeah, so they have to take the fundamentals into real consideration, because the supply of livestock would be needed on two fronts. For beef supply, it's about actual supply and availability of animals because of these two large storms that have made their way across the western United States and probably done a real number on the animals that are out on pasture. And the second version then is the pork that will be needed to feed into China, and that they appear to be willing at least to pay a higher tariff price to get at this point.
Yeah, you're talking about a global protein scarcity as we head into the summer months. And I think the thing that really changed the dynamic in the hog complex this week was that we're starting to get more information. I actually got information from a first party source that has just come back from China, who had a 1,000 sow unit in China that contracted African swine fever. And he didn't realize it, and the Chinese government didn't realize it until late February, early March. And so I do believe this disease snuck up on the government. And secondly, probably more importantly, is the fact that that sow unit continues to run empty and have no repopulation at this stage. And another second source that came out of China that I was able to get this week said that there's about 30% declines in the hog supplies in some of the major provinces, and those will start to show up in the third quarter. So I think that at this stage of the game, I've told clients and subscribers I could see a 20% decline in production in China. I think that's a fair number. I think that number will grow to 25, maybe 30% as we get into the third quarter and fourth quarter. And you're already seeing it in China's consumer prices. You know, the consumer price index for March was up over 5% for pork prices. That took the overall Chinese consumer prices up to a five-month high, up over 2.3%. I think you could actually see that consumer price index by late this summer because of the pork prices, maybe even break 5%. So I think this is where the what we've talked about between you and I, it's starting to, I think, happen where the Chinese are cutting that supply chain, cutting the beans out, cutting the meal out, and going straight for the pork just to control their prices. And this is the new dynamic that the trade has to deal with, not just the trade, not just the weather, and the trade negotiations, and not just the Federal Reserve policy and how the currencies work, but what impact does African swine fever have on us in the grain industry and in the soybean industry, and how would that hit us if, God forbid, anybody in the North American continent contracted African swine fever? And I think that's exactly why we saw the Pork Expo canceled.
So I have a secondary question. Did you ask why they had not repopulated that particular facility? Because this is a disease that is contagious animal to animal, but after they're gone, it's not particularly contagious to be able to clean and then repopulate.
Yeah, it's a great question. I did ask, and part of it is the government movement being so slow in terms of reacting at this stage, and I think that'll improve. But probably the more important point is many people cannot get feed right now, and cannot either get it because it's too expensive or cannot literally get it logistically. And it really begs the question, and this is where it would be a very big bright spot for the global grain trade, if the feed that the hogs are being fed, both the swill feed and the commercial complex feed, actually had the African swine fever virus in it. And that is probably the number one thing that I'm going to be working on as we go through into the summer and get planted, because that could make or break the feed industry and the grain prices for 2019, other than the outright negotiations.
Yeah, so the only way that I think would be possible is if those animals were being used in the feed itself, which that's one of the other problems we have had with animal feed in the past.
That they were near a mill. And I think that's the other possibility, is that the livestock units could actually be logistically close enough to a mill that it could get into it.
What's the possibility that because they are a planned economy, they said, you know what, we'll just eat less meat, we think, and we'll buy it on the open market. We won't have to ship the grain in.
Yeah, and I think that's where the supply chain gets cut. I think they're going to have to do that to some degree. Now, we did see their March imports of beans jump almost to 5 million tons versus 4.45 in February. The question is whether that was due to making nice as we went through the U.S.-China trade negotiations. And, you know, to kind of close this whole thing out, is I could take everything that happened between the U.S. report, USDA report, the weather, the negotiation stalling out. What I really can't take are those dismal export sales. I do not want to see any more 10 million bushel sales of wheat and 10 million bushel sales of beans. We've got to hold our exports in uplifted and up and high, or the trade's going to feel justified in their short position. The commercial is going to feel justified in not wanting to buy anything, and they're going to feel justified that these trade negotiations probably did stall out, and they're starting to really impact us negatively in the here and now. So these are the things that really matter as we go into next week.
Do you suppose on the USMCA and then the Europe US agreement potential that these nations have looked at the aluminum and steel tariffs that have not come on yet, or come off yet, and simply said, you know what, if we all work together on this, we might be able to make this work?
Yes, I do. I think you're 100% right. I have seen a shift from a defensive posture in a lot of these trading partners with the White House and President Trump's policy in trade to a much more offensive position. And I think it makes sense. We've got the European Union putting new leadership in place in May. We've got the Mexicans and the Canadians saying we can tolerate these tariffs. Our economies aren't collapsing because of these tariffs. Let's press a little bit harder because President Trump hasn't gotten an agreement with China yet. I think that's the domino that needs to fall. Either China or Japan need to fall here. And we're out of TPP. That started April 1. And all these things make sense to our trading partners that we probably are a lot more defensive than we were 6 months ago.
It'll be interesting to watch as it continues to play out. That's for darn sure.
As we buy caseloads of Maalox, that's exactly right.
It should be fun over the summertime. Hey, thanks so much, and I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with globalanalytics.biz. In today's agricultural news, more from the 2017 Census on Agriculture. This time around, we'll explore tillage practices across cropland in the United States. Soil conservation has been on the rise since the 2012 Ag Census. Here are the numbers for no-till. 96.5 million acres were no-tilled back in 2012. That increased to 104.5 million acres in 2017. Reduced tillage was at 76.6 million acres in 2012, an increase to 97.8 million acres in 2017. And where did all those acres come from? Well, out of the intensively tilled cropland at 105.7 million acres in 2012, down to just 80 million acres in 2017. By the way, if you're wondering about cover crops, they were up about 50% over that five-year period from 10.3 million acres in 2012 to 15.4 million acres in 2017. Here are some other numbers, the demographic side of the Census of Agriculture. The average age of all producers in the United States is 57.5 years old. That's up 1.2 years from 2012. The number of producers who have served in the military is 370,619, or 11% of all. They are older than the average at 67.9 years of age, by the way. On the flip side, one in four producers is a beginning farmer with 10 or fewer years of experience. And the average age is 46.3 years. Farms with new or beginning producers making decisions tend to be smaller than average in both acres and value of production. 36% of all producers are female, and 56% of all farms have at least one female decision maker. Female producers are most heavily engaged in the day-to-day decisions, along with record keeping and financial management. And finally today, Burger King, the fifth largest fast food chain, is getting into the plant-based alternative protein market. Burger King, working together with Impossible Foods, announced they'll be selling what's called the Impossible Whopper, a plant-based version of the company's most famous sandwich. A Drover's report says Burger King will start selling the new offering at 59 restaurants throughout the St. Louis area. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's check in on the weather forecast now from Eric Snodgrass. He's at Agribull. I think I want to stay right here in the United States this time around. Eric, let's begin with that great big blizzard that has pummeled parts of the Midwest this week.
Yeah, we certainly have enough to talk about in the U.S. that is making quite an impact across, you know, ag in the country. And you're certainly right. The big blizzard that went through the middle part of the country was a big one. And the snow that I've seen so far getting laid down across parts of Nebraska through South Dakota, parts of North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, you know, this is going to take some time to get rid of this. Some of the snow depths up there are well over a foot. And the pattern isn't breaking toward being really warm right after, which means that snowpack is going to lay around for a while. The problem is going into this blizzard, the soil temperatures had warmed up. So we now had the top few inches of soil that's thawed. We put the snow down on top of it, and it gets going to melt into that and get very mucky and muddy, and it's going to prevent a lot of field work. And the overall pattern just really isn't changing too much in the near term to bring a lot of sustained warmth. So that snowpack is going to just push back any sort of field work, especially planting, for possibly a couple of weeks at least. So this was an impactful event this time of year.
So we're going to stay wet. We've had some nice days here, 70, some wind that helps in drying out, but we're wet here as well. Any indication that we'll stay in a drier form over the next 2 weeks, or do we have more systems that we'll be running through?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you that things are going to dry down, but you know, when you look longer term, let's go all the way back to October of last year. If we just put all of October last year to now, into historical context, we're actually wetter than we were in 1993. That would be 1992 to 1993. And what we have to deal with in the near term is there's a system emerging in Texas later today that's going to be racing straight toward Illinois. And as it does so, it's going to light up the south with a lot of severe weather. In fact, the Storm Prediction Center just issued a moderate risk to the lower Mississippi River Valley. We could be getting some of that thunderstorm threat up into Illinois by the time we get into this into Sunday. Not necessarily the severe stuff, but some very, very wet times ahead for us at the end of this weekend. And we're just not done yet. The pattern is established with a ridge out west, and therefore we have a trough that keeps diving in the middle part of the country, and each one of those troughs just initiates a new low pressure system. So we've got one that's shaping up for the middle to end of next week to basically follow the same trajectory as this weekend system. So any warm up we do get between them will be just met with more rain after they go past. And I'm not expecting to see that pattern shift maybe until the beginning of May. And that's unfortunate. You know, it's not as though we're going to finish the month really, really cold, but wet is our problem. And it looks as though by the time we get to the beginning of May, a more dominant southeastern ridge begins to develop. And we like those this time of year. That brings in some warmth. Unfortunately, it also brings in more localized severe weather rather than these big, broad systems that come through. We're going to light up the central plains, I think, with quite a bit of severe weather once we get into May. So, but at least it is a ridge, and we want to see ridging over the east and southeast to bring our temperatures back up, to give us a stretch of days where things dry out so that we can really get this 2019 crop going.
Again, just as a reminder, that's in early May that you're thinking about that, right? Okay.
It is. I think persistence is going to be a problem here. You know, it's, you know, the atmosphere kind of has, it has a pretty good short-term memory, has a horrible long-term memory. So what's going on, the persistence in the pattern is going to continue to push forward, I think, for at least through about April 24th, 25th, before we ever start to see any sort of decent break in what I think is this pattern we're stuck in.
Have you been watching any data on the long-range forecast for this summer?
I have, and this summer is pretty tricky. And why it's so tricky is because oftentimes we love it when summer weather patterns shape up based upon big teleconnections. So I'm saying, you know, there's a big ocean pattern in temperatures in the Pacific that just helps us pinpoint what's going to happen. We don't quite have that. We're going to have this weak El Nino that's hanging around, and the models are responding to that. There is one thing I'm very concerned about, and that was our latest long-range runs by the European model show a very wet upper Midwest, northern plains. I'm talking headwaters for the Mississippi and the Missouri River for June. And there's two ways by which we can get that: a big southeast ridge, which puts them in drought and us in ring of fire precipitation mode, or we can have some northwest flow, which we'd much, much, much rather have than the southeast going into drought. What all this means is that the models keep coming in wet and cool for summer. But I just want to put a big grain of salt in this. You know, these models are not perfect. They're responding to their initial conditions. That's what goes into them right now. And if everything that goes into the model is wet, well, it's going to have a hard time drying everything out. So I think we need to look at these long-range models with a healthy bit of skepticism and keep our focus a whole lot more on the coming 2 to 3 to 4 weeks as to when we can get this crop in and get it going.
Can I have you do some more historical perspective? I don't know whether you've looked at this, but if I remember correctly, and you mentioned this, in 1993, it was 92 going into 93, it was very wet, but it was June and July that caused the real great flood of 1993, which didn't come until the end of August.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And so it was the end of this time period I just analyzed that it got wet. So in other words, April through August, where things got wet. I mean, I remember I was 13 years old when this happened, sandbagging on the Mississippi and on the Illinois River. We were doing that middle of late into late summer. So it was from now moving forward that 1993 was so bad. So that's, and I'll tell you, in 1993, there was a ridge over the southeast, a ridge over the southwest, and we were right there on the boundary between them. But that's a focal point for, you know, lifting the air, weather. That's where we get it. And so I've got some concerns. I am by no means calling 1993 the best analog, though, to 2019. It's just something that's on a lot of folks' minds because we're so wet.
Hey, thanks so much. I'm glad you're not calling it that way.
Me too. I think there's going to be some other things that'll play out that we're going to be kind of coming into realization in the coming weeks here.
All right, Eric. Thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible.